Football Weekly is on the air.
Here's the snap. Drops back. Throws the ball. The long ball's outfield. Pass is tipped and it is intercepted. Get us a late break to tackle. He's still going. 50, 45, 40, 30.
He's going to go all the way.
Runs left to the 20, to the 10, to the 5. 30. Stretch into the end zone.
Touchdown.
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 This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football this week. Coming up, Peyton returns to Indianapolis.
Other teams not so sure about their quarterback situations and coaches on the bubble. How hot is the seat under Greg Schiano?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee on Pro Football Weekly. The Way We Hear It features news and information from around the NFL, with Eric Edholm of Shutdown Corner on Yahoo Sports and Arthur Arkish of USA Today. We're joined by Arthur in this segment, and fellas, I could entitle this, although it's a little early in the season for this, Coaches on the Bubble. On the early season bubble, certainly Les Frazier in trouble in Minnesota. The Vikings are 1-4. We'll start a third different quarterback this week when they play the Giants on Monday night, huh?
They will. And, you know, this one is really curious because Christian Ponder is your future. He's your high first-round pick just a couple years ago. The Vikings and Rick Spielman, the GM, insisting that he still has a very bright future with Minnesota. Then they go out and sign Josh Freeman, drafted in the first round just a couple years before Ponder, also a project as a franchise-type quarterback. And he's starting 2 weeks after he comes to town. Now, you do have Ponder out with the bruised ribs, and so there is some speculation that that injury is legit. But Matt Cassel, one real good performance, one real bad one. They go right to Freeman. Clearly, the idea is to make Freeman the franchise quarterback. And I'm hearing rumblings now, Arthur, people saying, gee, you know, Les Frazier's a great guy, but other than that 1 year, it's been up and down, and he's probably not the guy to develop our new quarterback.
Yeah, I'm hearing similar rumblings as well. I mean, you look back to Frazier's tenure, of course, he had the very surprising playoff berth last season, but otherwise it has been up and down in his short time in Minneapolis this year. You could talk about the quarterback, but really his failures start with the defense, and particularly the secondary, which is supposed to be his expertise. I was actually at the week two loss where they blew it in the final minute against the Bears. And I remember sitting in that press conference after the game and Leslie Frazier saying, you know, there's some things we could have done differently. You'll remember that Martellus Bennett game winning touchdown. They had the absolute wrong coverage. They had two receivers on the left side of the formation and only one defensive back over there. So Frazier acknowledged after the game they played it wrong. They were being too conservative. And you could see it in the players' faces too, that perhaps there was more that needed to be done by the coaching staff. So I think it starts there. You could talk about how he's not the guy to develop a quarterback. I would agree with that as well. But it's really the defense that's been getting gassed. They've allowed 31 points in each of Minnesota's losses, and that's supposed to be what Frazier's able to hang his hat on.
In a way, just to add to it a little bit, I was misinformed, as were others, that Les had gotten a contract extension after the playoff run last year. But as Arthur pointed out to me, in fact, he didn't. There was an option year on that deal with the Vikings exercise. So with only 1 year to pay him, if they were to make a change, that also works against him because that's pretty common when coaching changes are made.
Meanwhile, down in Houston, is Gary Kubiak, fellas, in trouble? The Texans are disappointing 2-4 and on a four-game skid.
You know, I know this was Arthur's beat, so I'm going to defer to him in a moment. He was on it for a few years until switching to the NFC North. I will tell you this, Wayne, that this is a team that was supposed to contend for a Super Bowl this year. Finally got over the hump, got to the playoffs the last couple of years, won in the first round each of the last 2 years, then went out unimpressively. This was supposed to be the year. It's one thing to get back to the playoffs again and not get to a Super Bowl, but it's another thing to have the wheels come off, and nobody understands why. Arthur, he's not going to be an early season casualty. I suspect he'll finish the year regardless, but it's hard to imagine Gary Kubiak still being the coach of the Texans after this season if they're not in the playoffs again.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we know Bob McNair has been as patient as any owner in the league over the past several years, as long as the Kubiak tenure has worn on, but it's kind of what you said. It's the way that this team has fallen from grace. They are still one of the most talented teams in the NFL, so you see a complete meltdown like this, the blown leads and getting blown out in other games. They have not shown the same type of discipline. Kubiak's play calling has come under fire. He's been a little too predictable at times. But at the end of the day, this obviously comes down to the quarterback position. Kubiak has stood behind Matt Schaub again and again. Of course, he was forced to go a different route after Schaub got hurt last week, but there's a very, very good chance that Schaub's not back, and unless the Texans can find a way to pull a complete 180, it could be the same for Kubiak.
You know, all these coaches who are in trouble and on the bubble, most of them have quarterback problems, and that's a big part of it. Let's flip it to the other side of the football, guys. Defensive players across the league, at least I'm sensing, are getting really frustrated about being the fines that are meted out by the NFL during the week on hits that some most of the time aren't even flagged during the game. But, you know, there's a real question now as to where you can hit. The NFL has asked players, defenders, to lower the target area, so they have. And they've come low. And you see defensive backs cutting the legs out from under wide receivers, and now we're starting to see knee injuries like the one suffered by Randall Cobb in Baltimore last week, the Green Bay wide receiver.
Well, and Wayne, I know you did that broadcast, but what was so clear and interesting about the events in that game was afterwards. Remember, on the play that Cobb got hurt, Aaron Rodgers went for Matt Elam, the rookie safety, and got in his face a little bit, and then it was one of the Packer offensive linemen who actually ended up getting a flag because he stepped in to defend Rodgers. Rodgers said after the game that he went to Elam because he thought he went low and he wanted to call him on it. And he said the kid looked at him and said, hey, if I can't go high, where am I supposed to go? And even Aaron Rodgers acknowledged it is a problem. Jay Cutler in Chicago, Arthur, was talking about it just late this week. He said, I feel bad for the defensive guys. I don't know where they're supposed to hit when they're playing the game at full speed.
Yeah, you know, Randall Cobb taken out by a rookie safety. DJ Swearinger, the Texans rookie safety, took out Dustin Keller earlier in the preseason. But you know what? This is not on the rookie safeties, in my opinion. This is on the NFL and in the growing gray area. I just believe that the defenders are running out of places where they can strike. And I think that this is a sort of a pendulum situation where it's going to have to start to shift back a little bit, at least give defenses a chance here, because I understand that it's good intentions. I like some of the things that Goodell is doing, but it's really making it an uneven playing field more and more so by the day, and it's just really not fair on defenses. We're seeing the gray area increasing all the time.
Back with more Way We Hear It when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring Hub Arkush with news and notes the way we hear it from across the NFL. And we're joined by Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner for this segment of The Way We Hear It. You know, let's take a look at another coach on the bubble. We talked about this in the previous segment with a couple of coaches. But Greg Schiano of the winless Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and again, the quarterback he started the season with behind center, is now going to be starting for the Minnesota Vikings. So that quarterback-coach relationship has a lot to do with who's on the bubble and who isn't.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's no question about it. I mean, that relationship with Freeman, I think, got off to a bad start last season, and it never quite repaired itself, and it just sort of started tumbling in the wrong direction. And, you know, even if Greg Schiano did think that Mike Glennon was the choice, I think there's a far better way to handle things with Freeman than the way it went down. He's obviously a talented player, but wasn't maxed out to his abilities, didn't seem to have the chemistry with the coaching staff, and I think we can at least point to Schiano for part of the blame there. Now, how's he going to handle the rest of the team? You know, there's been some observers who said the defense hasn't played with any kind of urgency this week. I mean, you know, if that starts tumbling, look out. I think he's in real trouble.
You know, I think he's already in real trouble, period, guys, because, and you know what, the bottom line with the Josh Freeman thing, I'm not even sure that it wasn't a lot more Freeman's fault than Schiano's.
Yep.
A lot has come out about the way this young man was carrying on down there, but still, to get off to the start he did in Tampa, and then to fade the way they did at the end of the season last year, and now to be 0-5 this year, a lot of folks thought that because of the defense and the running game with Doug Martin, you know, that this team could be somebody you have to take seriously, and they've become one of the two or three worst teams in the NFL. This is Mark Domenech, the young general manager's second go-around at head coach. The Glazier family has been very much uninvolved, but the Bucs are becoming kind of a laughingstock. And, you know, guys, you've got the presence of Tony Dungy looming over the whole thing. He still keeps a home in Tampa. Now, I'm not suggesting in any way that I've heard that Dungy wants to come back on the field and particularly go back to Tampa Bay, but I guarantee you everybody I talk to down in Tampa is talking about, well, will Dungy step in? Will the Glazers reach out to him for advice? What's going to happen here? There's no question that right now Greg Schiano is probably at the top of the NFL coaching bubble.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, but you know, we'll see what happens as that wheel turns down there in Tampa and in several other places, coaches on the bubble. Hey, guys, the headliner this week is the return of Peyton Manning and his new team, the Denver Broncos, to Indianapolis. And the fire was stoked a little bit, and I'm not sure, Hub, again, I'll defer to you on this, since I know you follow Jim Irsay religiously on Twitter, but the owner of the Colts may or may not have decided to fuel the fire with some comments he made on the reasons behind the change of culture in Indianapolis and the departure of Peyton Manning.
Well, Wayne, I am a big fan of Jim Irsay because, number one, he's a good man. Number two, he is great for the media. I actually don't follow him on Twitter, though, because I think some of it is so ridiculous, and I think it's unfair to his team and to his players. And this time, he clearly went too far. And when you've got, you know, not just Peyton Manning refusing to comment and his head coach, John Fox, accusing you of cheap shots, but Bill Polian coming back at him for this one, Tony Dungy coming back at him for this one, it made no sense. And then he tries to claim that he was taken out of context. No, he wasn't, Eric. I mean, it was pretty clear, you know, what he said. You know, we all read the entire piece, all the quotes, and he just screwed up. And this is a case of an NFL owner who sometimes is so busy just kind of having fun and thinking that he's more clever than everybody else and that he can do this stuff because he's a new age type owner. I think he really hurt his football team with this one. He created a tremendous distraction, not to mention the idea. It's one thing to poke the tiger. It's another thing to have all your employees line up in front of you, throw stones at the tiger, and let them take the beating.
Yeah, especially when the tiger is Peyton Manning, having the season he is. And you know, I think the poking was probably twofold. I think it was sort of maybe a thinly veiled shot at Peyton Manning, but I think Bill Polian was also in that discussion as well. And you could tell that the stress between Polian and Jim Irsay really kind of waxed in the last few years. And yet, you know, you listen to Manning's comments. I read something with Bob Kravitz, the Indianapolis Star, and he said, "It doesn't serve me very well," I'm paraphrasing, "but it doesn't serve me well to answer that question based on, you know, Jim's comments." So he just sort of kindly sidestepped it. And I think that tells you all you need to know about where he sits on that issue. He probably just shook his head and said, "Why you got to go there, Jim? You know, what does this serve anybody any good for?"
Yeah, and you know what? What was interesting is the fact, fellas, that Bill Polian, the former GM who built those teams in Indianapolis that made the playoffs, what, 11 times and were ousted in the first round something like seven times? Is that what Jimmy Irsay said? They were ousted in the first round of the playoffs? I mean, he's the guy who wasn't even hardly mentioned in those quotes, and yet he's the guy who may have taken the biggest shot.
Yeah, you know, again, it just absolutely none of it made any sense. You know, let me ask Jimmy Irsay this question. How many playoffs and Super Bowls would he have been in without Peyton Manning?
Yeah.
And I think that's
right.
The only thing you really got to look at here. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Eric, we'll talk to you a little bit later on in the program. The games are coming up next. We preview Week 7 of the NFL on Pro Football Weekly next. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the New Orleans Saints and Oakland Raiders are off this week. The Seattle Seahawks and Arizona Cardinals got things started Thursday night, and Russell Wilson avenged his NFL debut loss last year, leading the Seahawks to victory in the desert. Wilson threw three touchdown passes. Marshawn Lynch rushed for 91 yards in a 34-22 victory, pushing the Seahawks to 6-1. As the Arizona Cardinals fall at home. Arizona quarterback Carson Palmer, two more interceptions in the game. He's thrown 11 picks in the last five games, Hub.
Yeah, I would think that Carson Palmer, this is probably it. Bruce Arians down there talking about being happy to work with Carson Palmer, but they realize they've got a playoff-type defense and going nowhere on offense. They're also held to 30 yards running the football. Hats off to Seattle, Wayne. I was waiting for them to go on the road and do something, and they actually played a pretty good game in Arizona, which is not an easy place to play.
The winless Tampa Bay Buccaneers head to Atlanta, where the equally disappointing 1-4 Falcons are coming off a bye week. Falcons have been subject to injuries to key players, missed scoring opportunities, Hub, and overall underwhelming performances have led to a disappointing start. Now they resume their regular season without one of their top playmakers, wide receiver Julio Jones, gone due to a foot injury.
Well, and of course, Roddy White limping on that bad ankle, too, and so the running joke around the league is there any antidote for what ails the Atlanta Falcons? There's only one, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bad football team, really struggling. It is a big division game. Atlanta's, their play playoff hopes are probably gone in an NFC, which is so much more competitive than the AFC, but you've got to start somewhere. And if they can get a win here, maybe get their running game going a little bit, get the defense back. Certainly Matt Ryan's a guy who's capable of putting up some big numbers. If Roddy White can get healthy with Harry Douglas and Tony Gonzalez, they can overcome the loss of Julio Jones, but they got to get Steven Jackson back and working.
The 4-2 Chicago Bears are at Washington to face the 1-4 Redskins. The Bears haven't played since a week ago Thursday when they beat the Giants 27-21. Skins coming off their first win of the season 24-14 at Oakland. But as we would say at the Racetrack Hub, the Skins are stepping up in class here in this one.
Well, we think they are. But if you look at the Bears, you talked about the quality wins of the Philadelphia Eagles a few minutes ago. The Bears' wins are over teams that are 4-15. When they get in with anybody with anything, they tend to struggle a little bit. Redskins have got the weapons. You know, the Redskins amongst the top 10 in many categories in the league on offense, except for points scored. They haven't put the ball in the end zone. And that's where this Bear team struggles, is on defense. So I think the Bears probably are the class in this one and probably find a way to win. But this trip to the nation's capital, no sure thing for them.
Yeah, the Skins are averaging just under 400 yards of offense per game, but only 21.4 points per game. The St. Louis Rams take their 3-3 record to Carolina, where the Panthers are 2-3. Rams, in their best performance of the season, went wire to wire in a 38-13 pummeling of the slumping Houston Texans. Sam Bradford only threw 16 passes, but completed 12 of them for 117 yards with three short touchdown passes. Panthers won big at Minnesota Hub last week, 35-10. Cam Newton, a career-high 143.4 passer rating against the Vikings.
I thought both of these teams potentially could contend for wildcard spots this year, and they'd both been really awful prior to last weekend, but they each got themselves a decent win, so credit to them for that. I think the Panthers are probably the little more talented of the two, but Cam Newton's so inconsistent with the Rams. Loved what they did in Houston last week, just don't know where it had come from. They'd been playing horribly before. They've got to do that a few weeks in a row to convince me they're back.
It's the 2-4 Buffalo Bills visiting the 3-2 Miami Dolphins this week. And you know, Buffalo's been a tough out, even without quarterback E.J. Manuel. They've been tough. The one thing they do is sack the quarterback. They have 21 quarterback sacks. Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins have struggled to protect Ryan Tannehill. He's on pace to be sacked an NFL record 77 times.
You know, you look at Buffalo and you can see where it's going to come from. Mario Williams hasn't put up the huge numbers since he got the huge contract, but he's still a huge force out there. And Marcell Dareus inside, one of the best young defensive tackles in football. Problem for Buffalo, though, just no consistency on the offensive side of the ball. If the Dolphins can get Cameron Wake back and healthy, they can rush the passer pretty well, too. Yeah, I think the Bills will give the Dolphins some problems like they have everybody else. But in Miami, Dolphins, another one of these teams that I think maybe is a wild card contender, but these are the kind of games they got to win.
The 3-3 San Diego Chargers travel cross country to Jacksonville, where the Jaguars are still looking for their first win of the season, but showed some improvement. Jags trailed the Broncos by just 2 points heading into halftime. They ended up losing 35-19. But, Hub, the big news here is they covered the 28-point spread.
I was going to say, they were highly motivated. They didn't want to be the biggest underdog in the history of the game, but they did deserve to be, and they're going to deserve to be even at home again here. You know, you could argue not only that San Diego could be 5-1, they should be 5-1. I'm really impressed with the job that Mike McCoy and Ken Whisenhunt have done with the resurgence of Phillip Rivers and what they're getting out of this no-name defense. Now, I hate these coast-to-coast trips, especially teams going from west to east, but the Jaguars haven't really been competitive with anybody except for the Broncos last week, so I don't know if they can do it 2 weeks in a row.
San Francisco at Tennessee. Niners, after a couple of early season stumbles, have been back on track with three straight wins. Vernon Davis lifted them last week. He had 8 receptions, 180 yards, and 2 touchdowns in that win over Arizona.
You know, the 49ers are back. There's no question about that. They're going to be in the playoffs, but they're still not doing all the things we want to see them do. The passing game a little bit better with the connection with Kaepernick and Davis, who seem to be figuring out. But until they can get some other wideouts, and if they get Michael Crabtree or Mario Manningham back, it becomes a different deal. That makes Anquan Boldin that much better. But they've still got work to do in that passing game. Tennessee, back-to-back losses. But, you know, losing to Kansas City and Seattle is no shame. This is a fascinating football game. And particularly in Tennessee, Titans will beat you up on the line of scrimmage as well as anybody.
Meanwhile, Houston at Kansas City. Kansas City still unbeaten. Houston, one of the disappointments, as we've talked about. And the Texans will start Case Keenum at quarterback this week for the banged-up Matt Schaub.
one of the great quarterback names in the NFL. Case Keenum, he's got to play for the Texans. Who else would he play for? He was an undrafted rookie free agent. T.J. Yates, who they took in the fifth round and played in the playoffs a couple years ago, is not the answer. I don't know how this Texan team got in the trouble that they're in, but I'm not sure at this point that they've got the answers to climb their way out.
AFC North battle shapes up. 3-3 Baltimore Ravens head to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are coming off their first win of the season. And, Hub, this might be the Steelers' last stand to make a run at competitiveness in this division.
You know, I don't really care about point spreads. I've never been able to afford to bet on football games. But somebody's got to explain to me, the Steelers are actually favored in this game. The defending world champion Ravens at 3-3 going to the 1-4 Steelers are the underdog, and I don't see that. I thought the Ravens were very impressive against the Packers defensively and even in the running game. The Ravens' problem, I continue to say, Joe Flacco will not be a $100 million quarterback until he can find some consistency in his game, and it's just not there right now.
Monday night game, the 1-4 Vikings visiting the 0-6 Giants. The Josh Freeman era apparently begins for Minnesota.
And maybe the Teddy Bridgewater Bowl. You know, you just don't know about this game. How the Giants got this bad is another mystery to me. I thought the Vikings were a bit of a fluke last year. I didn't expect them to be this bad this year either. But Wayne, it's the Giants. I don't understand how this team can be 0-6. We're going to find out if they stay winless after this one. If they do, Tom Coughlin, I don't know if he's in trouble, but Tom Coughlin may say, hey, I've had enough of this.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this week on Pro Football Week.
Pro Football Week is on the air.
We resume with our regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly and again bring in Arthur Arkush, NFC North reporter for USA Today Sports Weekly. Hey guys, I'm really excited about this game. I think Cincinnati at Detroit is going to be a war. These are two teams I believe are going to be in the playoffs. They square off at Ford Field this weekend. Cincinnati Bengals, Detroit Lions, both squads have won four of their first six games. Bengals have won two in a row, including a 13-6 win over the Patriots at home and 27-24 overtime at Buffalo. Lions outscored the Browns 24-0 in an impressive second half on the road to extend their record to two games over 500. Matthew Stafford working with a relatively inexperienced receiving core, Arthur. The great Calvin Johnson was used more as a decoy. He's been slowed by a knee injury last week. So they were really down their top two receivers, Calvin Johnson and Nate Burleson, and yet were able to get the job done in Cleveland on the road to the big second half last week.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Wayne, that offense didn't really get going a whole lot until the second half, Reggie Bush in particular. So you can look at it two ways. They have been a little uneven as Johnson has been either on the sideline or hobbled and playing more a decoy as an actual threat. But the other way to look at it is that they've managed this 4-2 record, and not everything has went their way yet for this team. So I think that if Bush and Johnson can get on the same page, this is going to be a really, really dangerous club to look out for. I think in this matchup, though, what you're going to be concerned with, you know, it starts for me with Detroit having to find a way to stop the run. Cincinnati has found a little bit of a rejuvenated running game. That is one area where the Lions continue to struggle a little bit. So I think that's going to be very interesting. And, you know, Gio Bernard's a guy who's been getting a lot more involved for the Bengals, and that'll be a good place to start.
Yeah, you know, Liz, I don't want to leave our best stuff on the cutting room floor, so to speak. We were just talking before we came on. I'm very impressed by this Detroit Lions team. They're playing better and better football, and they're doing it with a, you know, 10% of Calvin Johnson, without Nate Burleson, with a rebuilt offensive line. But this team has come together, and there's some good young talent on it. Now, the Bengals, you know, those are a couple impressive wins when you look at not just the Patriots battling Buffalo on the road, but don't forget that Packer game. I'm not sure they should have won it, but they did. You know, it's not a bad resume. My problem with the Bengals, though, is that they are so undisciplined. They make so many silly mistakes, and they continue to do it, even in some of these big wins. So I think this is a fascinating matchup. I think the winner of this game is one that you do have to take seriously, not just to get to the playoffs, but to maybe win a playoff game or two.
Another game involving an NFC North team, the Green Bay Packers play host to the Cleveland Browns. You know, the Packers are banged up. They practiced all week with just two healthy outside linebackers, and neither one of them was supposed to see the light of day on defense when the campaign began. They're going to be without Randall Cobb, and they may be without James Jones, both down with injuries. Cobb has been placed on the injured reserve list designated for return. But the Packers still have Aaron Rodgers, and the Browns are down to Brandon Whedon at quarterback. And you know what, Hub? The gap at that position, if it's as big as this, then the team that has the better quarterback should get it done.
Yeah, I like what the Browns are doing on defense. I think this is going to be an interesting challenge for them. They've got a lot of good young to middle-aged veterans over there, and Ray Horton's done a great job with them. But Whedon is a problem. I realize, we think because he's 30 years old that we can't call him a rookie. He's halfway through his second year. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure he's got 16 starts. He's just barely more than a rookie. But we haven't seen enough in those starts to believe that this is an offense that's going to take off. And, Arthur, I look at the Green Bay Packers, and yes, serious injuries, that's kind of a dilemma around the league these days. And yet, how many teams would like to lose a Randall Cobb and maybe even have James Jones limping and still be able to go to a Jordy Nelson? Jared Boykin looks like he's ready to come on. You got your Michael Finley making plays. You suddenly got Eddie Lacy in the third-ranked running game in the NFL. And then they lose Clay Matthews on defense. And I know Nick Perry's banged up. But you got guys like Mike Neal coming out of nowhere and playing well. So very talented Packers team. My guess is too much for these Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, of course, it speaks to the depth that Ted Thompson's been building for so many years. It's why the Packers are able to be among the league's best at withstanding these injuries and continuing to roll. So, yeah, I just don't see how Brandon Whedon's going to find a way to beat the Packers. I am concerned about some of these injuries, especially the guys off the edge. But the name you mentioned there, of course, Jordy Nelson, one of the league's best. You can go to him even with Cobb and Jones hurting. But Eddie Lacy really is the key to this offense at this particular moment. You're seeing more and more confidence from the kid. I had another really strong performance against a tough Baltimore stout defense last week. So he continues to improve. It continues to give this offense flexibility in a way we haven't seen in several years.
And, fellas, really, if you look at the numbers statistically, and I know that's not a real barometer, but statistically the Browns are a very solid defense, maybe more so even than the Ravens. They're seventh in yardage. They're seventh against the rush, eighth against the pass. This is a very stout defense. They just haven't gotten enough support from their offense. And if you look at Cleveland and the franchise, the difference at quarterbacks we've talked about, the difference in franchises, I mean, this is another new ownership group in at Cleveland. Michael Lombardi is the fourth general manager since 2008. Since the Browns came back online in 1999, they've had 41 starting quarterback changes and just two winning seasons over that period of time. We'll have more breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this Week 7 edition of Pro Football Weekly and welcome Eric Edholm, staff writer, Shutdown Corner, YahooSports.com, back to the program. A couple of games, Eric, that we wanted to discuss, and let's start with New England at the New York Jets. The Patriots 5-1 take on the 3-3 Jets. Pats eked out a 13-10 victory Week 2 in Foxborough over these Jets. You know, I've often felt this way, and I've seen it many times over the years, especially in the last 25 years or so. Quarterbacks make receivers more often than not. Let me put it that way. And, Tom Brady, the cast he's playing with, the receivers he has, I mean, almost nobody knows who they are, and yet they catch, like Kembrell Thompson, a 17-yard touchdown pass in the final seconds to knock off New Orleans. The magic of Tom Brady and quarterbacks of his ilk, Peyton Manning and some others, Brett Favre over the years, that's something to behold.
Yeah, no question about it. And, that cast of characters is going to get one of its leading men back this weekend. Reports surfacing Friday morning that Rob Gronkowski has been cleared for the game. So, even with the talk that he's been dominant in practice, we still wonder how much can he add. I mean, can he go for 65 plays in a game like this? That remains to be seen. But just having that red zone threat. I mean, if you've watched this team in the red zone this year, you've seen a lot of mistakes, a lot of missed opportunities. There's no doubt about it. They missed that physical presence and just a guy with great hands. A lot of the young kids have dropped passes this year. But I do admire the fact that Brady has kept his cool since that one little outburst on the sideline in the Jets game. And I think this is going to be an interesting one because the Patriots have gone in there and won by 23 and 30 points the last 2 years. So, even though it would seem like the Jets would have a good shot in this one, just history has said that it might go the other way.
Guys, I think that the league better worry that Tom Brady and the Patriots may have found something in the late moments of that game last week against New Orleans. The scene at the end of the big play. Now, I know it's the 5 seconds left. It's exciting. You do unusual things. But if you go back and look at Tom Brady touchdown passes over the last couple of years, you'll find very few where he races down to the end zone to talk to the receiver. But he was there for Kembrell Tompkins. We obviously don't know what he said, but he got up in his face, and I think he believes that that may have been a defining moment for this football team. Now, I look at the New York Jets guys. Rex Ryan has done an outstanding job with this football team. For all the fun we have with Rex, and he makes himself an easy target, the coaching job he's done to get them to 500, I think, is amazing. He's got an outstanding defense. He may or may not have a quarterback. The problem is that Geno Smith is so up and down each week, and so goes Smith, so goes this team's win-loss record. You don't know what you're going to get. I couldn't be more impressed with what Bill Belichick has done since the loss of Vince Wilfork. Now, this week, probably without Aqib Talib. Fortunately, it's a Jets team that doesn't have that go-to receiver that stresses you. So, yeah, the Patriots come in a big favorite. Normally, I'd like the Patriots in a route in this one, but we know strange things happen when these two teams get together.
Yeah, and Geno Smith, how he goes, that's how the Jets are going to go. You know, he was very good on a Monday night in Atlanta, and 6 days later, not so good in a 19-6 loss to the Steelers at home. Let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys, 3-3, traveling to Philadelphia to take on the 3-3 Eagles atop the disappointing NFC East. Cowboys showed some depth last week in the victory over Washington. They lost all-pro pass rusher DeMarcus Ware and top running back DeMarco Murray before halftime, but beat the Redskins 31-16. Eagles have won three games, and the combined record, guys, of the three teams they vanquished, 1-15. That's the Redskins, Giants, and Buccaneers.
Oh, man. Well, it's a game that has a lot of intrigue, obviously, just because of the divisional race. And you've got Nick Folk getting his second straight start, and a lot of people starting to wonder whether he's not the better quarterback option. But, yeah, I think you'd have to say these teams aren't quite at the elite level in the NFC. I mean, it comes down to defense for me. And as well as Monty Kiffin's unit started the season, you know, they're kind of trending in the wrong direction lately. And yet the Eagles seem to have found somewhat of a formula here. And I'm curious to see what Foles and LeSean McCoy, et cetera, can do against this Cowboys defense, which has lost some of its key guys. And without a running game there, too, I worry whether they can control the clock.
I echo the way Eric started there. I just kind of, oh, man. I listen to these teams, and I think, you know, the NFC East is truly the least this year. There's no question about that. But I got to say this. I tend to be hard on the Dallas Cowboys because I think the management of that team is so Bush League, and the way Jerry Jones runs things is ridiculous. But they showed me something last week, not just with, you know, coming back from the loss of Ware and DeMarco Murray, but even the whole picture after the way that they lost that game to Denver and all the concerns, to come back and be as impressive as they were, both defensively and Tony Romo very clearly in charge. Listen, when they get in with other winning playoff type teams, we don't know what Romo's going to do late in the game. The track record is what it is, but he's also one of the most productive and efficient quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And I look at a Dez Bryant, I, you know, he may have his questions off the field, but you'll take him over any receiver on that Eagles roster. Jason Witten, I don't know how they, you know, fill in for DeMarco Murray effectively, but I just think the Cowboys are the more talented team here. The fact that the game's in Philadelphia is a concern. But, Eric, let me just throw one more quickly back at you. To me, DeMarcus Ware is the key. Where are they going to find, you know, Jay Ratliff is gone now. DeMarcus Ware is out. Where are they going to find the pass rush?
It's got to come down to guys like George Selvey and Kyle Wilbur. Who? Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've done as best they can to patch that group up front. But, you know, you look back to the draft and passing up on Sharif Floyd and some other defensive line talent, you can start to question those things now. And, you know, nowhere this week. I mean, the fact that he hasn't missed a game in his career tells you how hurt he is.
Dallas and Philadelphia top the NFC East, getting together this weekend in the city of brotherly love. Stay tuned. The headliner on Pro Football Weekly is up next. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Peyton Manning returns to Indianapolis as the unbeaten 6-0 Denver Broncos visit the 4-2 Colts in the Sunday night showcase. Hub, the Colts may have been looking ahead to the upcoming game against Peyton and company when they stumbled on the road Monday night at San Diego. Now in a short work week, they've got to take on the NFL's number one team. The Broncos are the top-ranked offense. They've scored 35 points or more in every game this season. And you know, for the Indy fans, it's the new against the old in what could become a shootout if you take a look at this game and size it up.
You know, Wayne, it's never an excuse, but I think this is a classic example of a team that got caught in the sandwich game. Remember, they had the highly emotional win over Seattle at home. Then they've got to travel out to the West Coast, play on Monday night against a San Diego team that nobody's taken seriously. They're a 500 football team, knowing that they're coming home on the short week to play Peyton. You know, they never do it consciously, but I absolutely think they got caught looking ahead. And here's another fascinating stat. You know, the team that has lost lost, or not even lost, but the team that has played Seattle has lost the following week every week this season. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said about maybe the physicality of teams like the Seahawks. At any rate, the Colts are a vastly improved young football team. Andrew Luck may be the next Peyton Manning. He is not ready, I don't think, to trade punches with Peyton quite yet. Doesn't have the weapons that Peyton does. But when you look at T.Y. Hilton and you look at the young tight ends and Fleener and Allen, and then if they can find a way to incorporate Trent Richardson into this thing, maybe Donald Brown too, they'll be okay. They just don't have the consistency in their running game that the Broncos find by mixing those three running backs. They don't do much with it either, but between Monty Ball and Knowshon Moreno and Ronnie Hillman, mostly Moreno, they get enough balance out of it to set up that passing game. And then you look at the fleet of receivers that Peyton Manning has. The big issue for the Broncos is they don't play defense very well. I mean, let's just call it what it is. They're not good on defense. Maybe with Von Miller back, when that, you know, when he's ready, they get a little bit better. But the bottom line is that right now it's a bad defense. The Colts have shown they can put up points on anybody, and would they hang 37 on the Seahawks? So that's what this one comes down to, I think, a shootout. It will be highly emotional. I think the Colts kids will be sky high. But why, as we talked about in the way we hear it, Jim Irsay had to go and give extra incentive to Peyton Manning will be forever a mystery to me.
Well, you know, you mentioned Von Miller coming back, making his debut, and Champ Bailey getting healthy. He's not been himself after that preseason foot sprain he suffered, but the Broncos, certainly, that's the one area they look to improve is their defense. You know, when you look at the Colts, I mean, the win at San Francisco, as you mentioned, a victory over Seattle, they've got some credentials going into this game.
They really do. And just to clarify, the reason I said when Miller is ready is, yeah, he'll be back. And sometimes these guys playing for the first time are so sky high and so ready that they have a great game. But then they're not consistent. It takes a while. You can't just sit on the sidelines and watch and then suddenly immediately become the key cog in the defense that you've been. Plus, I'm sure that the Colts coaches will have him identified. It is a quality Indianapolis team. The Denver Broncos, probably the favorite to win the Super Bowl right now. This is as good a game as we've had so far. I'll actually be on the broadcast for this one for Westwood One and cannot wait to get to Indianapolis.
Denver at Indianapolis, the headliner in the NFL this weekend. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Here's this week's Publisher's Pen with Hub Arkush.
Well, Wayne, I've got to go back to what we talked about in the way we hear it, and it was an incident that was magnified by the Randall Cobb injury, the low hit by Matt Elam, the conversation around the league. Even offensive players, quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and Jay Cutler, saying they feel bad for the defensive players because they don't know where to hit anybody, and their bigger worry is what is it doing to the game. Well, I've talked to several ex and current players this week who've all told me that they're convinced that what's going to happen is there'll be a rule change again in the next year or two, and there will be what they call a strike zone, and all hits are going to have to be between the knees and the breastbone. They're going to make players hit guys in the middle, above the knees, below the shoulders. That way, you know, again, protecting both the head and the knees. Will it cause more chest, sternum, hip, groin injuries? Who knows? But it's the only reaction the league can have. But my reaction to it is, how hard are you going to make this game on the defensive guys? Now, going full speed, 100 miles an hour, you get this tiny strike zone to hit in. Players are convinced that's what's coming. Maybe it is. I just don't see it helping the game.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Randy Meyer is the producer engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. Now for Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly. We'll